Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast, a conversation where good thoughts help renew the mind with the Word of God. I'm Charlie Carter, and I'm here with Tim Little and Andy Stearns. Let's jump into the conversation. Welcome to the Thinklings Podcast. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm loving driving into work in the dark. It is my favorite thing.
Really?
It's just, I love driving in the darkness. It makes me feel like I'm ahead. I've gotten ahead. I have extra time, even though I know that's not right. And then sometimes if I time it just right, the sun starts to come up and I can see a nice sunrise. So that's been nice.
Yeah.
I'm all the whole time changing thing. Like in the summer, I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm like, oh, it's still dark. So guess what? Go back to sleep. You know, if it's light, it's like, oh, it's time to get up. You know, that doesn't work right now.
Not as good for you now.
Yeah. So I have to set alarms again and figure stuff out.
Yeah. When does the clock actually go back or forward? When is that?
I don't
know. Backwards.
I don't think the government tyranny starts for another couple of weeks.
So. Okay. Yeah. Well, the government tyranny.
It's always
never
here.
Stops.
Sorry. I'm in
it doesn't sleep.
The time tyranny.
All right. Let's get into what's in this episode. I think we're just drinking Tim Little special this morning for coffee. Yep,
that's it.
Yep.
Hey, it's not bad. You said it was like funky and you didn't like it. And it's just, I would say it's
a little oaky.
A little oaky. I would say it is a little bit like the way an echo sounds. It sounds like the thing, but maybe it's not quite the thing. So I'd say like this sounds, it has the flavor where it's like, it was a good cup. It was really a good bean, but there's like an echo nature to it. So it's not bad.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a good bean. I think that may have been it. It cracked on first crack pretty quickly. And I wondered if I needed to roast it a little bit longer.
Yeah, there is a little bit of green. Yeah, there's actually a little bit of green in there, I think. I would agree.
Hmm. Well, it's okay. Yeah. We will announce 200 for 200. We're still trying to get to 200 reviews. I don't know where we're at. I think we're in the 180s somewhere. But we will painstakingly announce this until we hit 200. I actually thought of yesterday we could do 225 in 2025.
Oh, man.
So once we hit the 200, you're just going to hear us try to get another 25 after that.
I don't feel like we should put our listeners through that.
No.
man, there's like a ton, though. Like, we have another one.
182?
Yeah, we're up to 182.
I know,
and
some people.
This one's a Trail Ridge. Someone. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So hey. They heard you at Trail Ridge. So
we need 18. We need two fellowships worth.
Well, I know some
one adult
I think two
in
people
years.
Are waiting for 200. They want to be the 200th. And I'm like, just don't. Just get it done.
Just do it. we're almost to the point where I'm just going to like buy a couple of
burner phones
and start filling out
some. There we go.
But anyway, should I put the endorsement thing here, Tim, or should I wait to
go
book
for
some
it
business?
Whenever you want, man.
We received our first endorsement back for Mapping Discipleship, which is the book that I have written and has been nurtured by Tim and Andy and Faith Publications.
That is so exciting.
And that was from friend of the podcast, Scott Annual.
Woo.
And he was very kind in writing that. And I was more prepared, I would read it here, but you can just read it on the back cover of the book when it comes out in January.
Yep. That is really cool, Charlie. That's that's really awesome. I'm really excited about this because when you started writing those chapters, we were in the basement of the seminary building. It was all the way back then.
Way back in the day.
Like lots of things had changed since then. So it's cool to see like your Song of Songs progression, to see that just because you had taught it for like 8 years ago at our church.
Yeah.
But then seeing you over the years and just learning that stuff from you when we first started meeting 7 years ago.
And I'll give credit to Jeff Dilliard, who's a pastor in Ohio, who I just saw recently on a drive back from New York. He was the one, we were sitting in my office in 2018 or 2019, and we were talking through some of this stuff. And he's like, do you have this written down anywhere? And I'm like, well, no, not really. I mean, I have some of it kind of jotted in different places. So he was the one that prompted the initial list of like passages and questions that then got morphed into chapters and then, you know, are now in the book. So
that's
and
funny.
Obviously a lot of the material was filtered through John Saucer as well. Mm-hmm. That's where I got it from. But Jeff was, he's the one that was like, hey,
that was
you should probably write this down.
You didn't have anyone in 2017 telling you the same thing very loudly that you didn't listen to
until a student said it?
Oh, that's right.
You did. Well, I remember you specifically wanted like those passages.
Yeah, I wanted the passages.
And then you printed out that like...
Oh, that's right.
Like I don't know the dimensions
11 by 17.
Yeah, and you printed all of those out.
Those were good times.
I think I still have that somewhere.
Those were good times.
Anyway, so that's fun. But since we're talking about books, we should just do that thing that we always do.
Books and business.
Let's talk about some books. And I will go first since I'm going to have our main discussion today. I recently drove out to New York in one day.
Wow.
15 hours of painstaking joy.
I've done that drive on multiple occasions.
Yeah. And you know exact because you have family right in this area.
Yep.
And so I had an Audible book recommended to me from the AI of Audible. So, you know, if it's demons, I don't know, but it was a good recommendation. So I had just finished The Christian Mind.
They know what you like.
They do. I had just finished The Christian Mind by Harry Blimires, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. And then it's like, hey, since you listen to this, you probably would like this other book. And it was Another Gospel by Alisa Childress.
Woo, yeah.
And narrated by the author. And I was like, oh, I could listen to that whole thing on the drive. And it's about a former Christian pop singer deconstructing and then reconstructing. And so the book is her kind of chronicling that story of being challenged by her progressive pastor about whether the Bible's true, about whether Jesus was real. And it's her kind of arguing and battling through that. And it's, I think, a very good book. We'll talk about it at another point, probably in a week or two. But yeah, it's a good book. I would recommend it. So
I'm really excited about that.
Yeah.
I cannot wait for that.
So my books and business is The Healthy Pastor by Dean Taylor. So this book is not out yet. It is...
Dean Taylor.
Friend of the podcast.
Friend and friend of us.
Yeah,
we need people that aren't really our friends, but
we need to have him on the podcast again.
We do.
So anyway, I'm just kind of working through this. We're getting close. We're just talking about Charlie's book, Mapping Discipleship, which we'll be releasing hopefully the very beginning of January, maybe December, but I doubt it. It'll probably be right before classes start in January. And then Dean's book will hopefully be coming out a couple or 3 months after that. So I'm going through, reading through it, kind of like a last read through before sending it to the typesetter. Typesetting is when they put it in the actual book format, kind of format. And really good stuff. Dean writes very compassionately. He really, once you read him, you can tell, you know, he loves you and he wants what's best for you and he wants to encourage you. And there's a lot of pastors who, well, they could use a few more sheep that would do that, you know, that would encourage them. And so this is a kind of a little reminder to me as I've started working through this book. And I pray that it's a real blessing to a lot of pastors. And if there's some pastors there that are tired, I would just even encourage you, as Dean is seeking to do in the book, to press on, keep your sights set on the Lord, and to walk in the fear of the Lord, not the fear of man, the fear of your church people, and then trust the results with the Lord.
I would say one of the things when I think of Dr. Taylor is gentleness. He's always been a very kind, gentle guy. Even when I've asked him about questions about controversial ministry issues, he never denigrates the other view. He's pretty even-handed, which I appreciate. Okay, so what am I listening to these days, men? Well, let me tell you.
Oh, boy.
I'm listening to a book called Lumen, which is the second book in the Nightingale Chronicles, and I'm sucked in. And here, let me explain.
Oh,
let me rewind and explain how this happened.
Oh, that's what that means.
That's right. Krypton means it's hidden.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe it was like kryptonite.
Listener, in the show notes or that we're looking at, I put krypton, which is the Greek word for hidden, which is why a crypt is where you hide a body. And and kryptonite is Superman's hidden weakness. And so krypton is, it's all, my password for one of my Wi-Fis was krypton one time.
Words are fun.
I know, aren't they? And it's like been there the whole time. Everyone knows what kryptonite is, but no one.
It's just hard to find.
Did you know abracadabra? Abracadabra. It's Hebrew.
What? What is it?
Did you know this?
No.
Wait. What is it?
Abra. Bara is to create.
Create, yeah.
So abra is I create.
And then what's the?
Kadavra. It sounds like cadaver. It's not that. It's the word davar, to speak. And Thus it is. I create and thus it is.
No way.
Yeah, it's Hebrew.
Is
so words are fun. Anyway,
so you're saying that the Bible teaches about magic?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And who's the master magician?
Aslan.
Jesus. There actually was a... Can I pause for one
minute? Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
At this ordination I was at recently...
Totally busted into your books and business.
It's okay.
Somebody asked an ordination candidate who, when Saul goes to the Witch of Endor and he calls up Samuel, was it actually Samuel? And it was in angelology, I believe. And it was like, he wanted the answer, no, it was Satan. Which is interesting in its own right. But then that discussion like devolved into, do you believe that all this controversy over UFOs and aliens is just like satanic warfare? And it's like, oh my goodness. Like, are we, why is this being discussed at an ordination? But anyway, so as we're...
So as you said that, the X-Files soundtrack started playing in my head from the late 90s.
Love it.
And any kids in the 90s know that one.
All right, back to your Krypton.
So I wanted to hide this from the guys because I wanted to hear the reaction that I'm actually in the second book. So here, let me rewind and tell you how this happened. So a longtime listener of the podcast, Melissa Troutman, author herself, is the one who recommended it. And since I wasn't going to give it a high mark, I didn't know if I wanted to say it because I didn't want anyone to think ill, but she was caught up with the podcast, and I had mentioned it that first time that I was listening and I wasn't sure about it. She was super excited, and I wrote back and I said, well, I said that, and I kind of said, I'm not giving it a great review, the romance part and then the blah, blah, blah. And so we had this back and forth on Facebook Messenger, and it was really fascinating. And the second time, Tim, I had mentioned, I didn't know this is a Christian book.
Right.
And you had said, well, does a Christian have to write an explicitly Christian story to make it a Christian fiction? And I said, well, that's the question.
Right.
And so we ended up going back and forth about that a lot. So she had some really interesting thoughts on that. It'd be a very good discussion in the future, probably for us. But what then she did is she said, this is where it goes next, and this is where it goes last in the third book. And then I realized, that sounds very interesting. So
sold.
I wasn't even going to pick the second one up, but I'd gone back and forth with Troutman, and I found myself thinking all about it. And I was like, that'd be it. And so then I was trying to find something to listen to, and I thought, I'm just going to do it. And so it's going better this time, and here's why. The weirdo reader lady, I cranked it to 1.5 to start.
And it's working.
And it's way better. Secondly, I sort of understand the heads up on the romance part, and I don't think it's going to be as central. And I just really do think the audio messed up the first book. But then thirdly, this one's revealing way more plot. It's way more interesting. I think the whole reason you read the first book, I think, is to so far get to the second book. I'm only a third of the way into it, and all kinds of stuff is being revealed. There's really intriguing stuff. So I don't know what to give away and not to give away on spoilers. So listener, if you're thinking you might listen to this, look in the show notes and skip ahead to the next section, because I'm going to talk about something that might give something away. And you guys, sorry, I'm going to give something away. So it's this dystopian future. And it seems like castles and kings and things like that, and these lands with like feudal lords. So I was thinking one way, but just recently they get to this land. They're kind of on this like kind of questy kind of thing. And this land really values learning about the past, because they only think about the future. They're like totally future minded. And so they've been researching this old technology from the old world called electricity. Okay. So now it's like what our world today could be in the future. So now I'm really intrigued. And then the other thing is that they're in this land where they talked about the land that you're in. Okay. The whole land doesn't have any king, because in the past they had kings and it didn't go well.
Right.
So when they came to this new world, and this was the quote that I just listened to as I walked in here, and I'm like, this is so good. They said they decided to leave their kings and their gods behind to make a better world. And then what happened is they actually brought all their evil with them, and it's worse. Now I'm like, now that's fascinating. So it sounds like a lot more interesting. So I'm very interested in this one, and I am curious if I go back and listen to the first one. But I change my mind on it. I don't know. So I'm listening to Lumen. It's the second book, and it's, I'm very curious.
Nice. Sounds interesting.
Hey, now we've got a listener email, and Tim's going to answer that. And is that what you want to say, Tim?
If that's okay.
We have an email that listeners can email.
You know, send those emails in, thinklingspodcast@gmail.com.
Wow. It's like this whole time they could have been emailing us all of their thoughts and questions.
Got a big one just recently.
Actually, they have been, and we just don't always answer.
Horrendous. <Hey-o. laughs> Emily Archer just sent a really long email.
I did see that. Topic. I did. Yeah. I usually see them all, and then I put them in folders to like, hey, we're going to get to this at some point. Will. So you're not forgotten. You're just avoided temporarily.
So I reviewed a book on a remarriage in the early church by Andrew Doss. And Brian Collins wrote in and shared a little more information about Andrew Doss. He mentions that Doss is Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, which I think requires confessing inerrancy, and he's opposed to the New Perspective. But he doesn't teach at an LCMS school, and he did publish through Erdman's, which is kind of just funny. Brian's a bibliophile. He reads a lot, and he even mentions it's hard to know quite how to place him. So just kind of a little author feedback: when you're reading a book, particularly a theological book, that's a book that the author, you know, they're bringing their background to that book. So I really appreciated that input. Thanks for sending that in, Brian. And that gives me just a little bit more, what fills out the picture of reading Remarriage in the Early Church. So there we go. I'm done.
Awesome. Yeah, Brian has sent in some really helpful follow-ups over the years here. I think he sent something in about the Rime of the Ancient Mariner when we'd mentioned that, and that's on my list if I circle back through to get some of the resources he recommended. So let's have a conversation about The Christian Mind by Harry Blamirez. Not Blamirez, Blam. Iris.
Blam.
Blam. Blam. So a little bit of background on who this is. This gentleman, Harry Blamirez, was born in 1916, and he just died in 2017. So he lived over 100. He was a student at Oxford in the 40s, I believe. And if you jump on his Wikipedia page, he was tutored by a little known Christian of the time period, Clive Staples Lewis.
Hey, there we go.
Better known as C.S. Lewis, there better known as Jack, better known as...
You're horrendous.
The Goat.
The Goat.
That's too far.
Okay, yeah. I mean, maybe not the greatest of all time, but he's in there. He's in the discussion.
He's in the discussion, yeah.
Like, if you were picking a team...
Okay, back to the book.
Anyway. So, oh man, I just had a thought pop into my head, Tim. Curtail me.
You're curtailed.
Okay, thank you.
Back to the book.
You just grabbed your coattails and yanked.
I requested curtail. Thank you.
Charlie, you've never done that.
Yeah.
That was so great.
That is the essence of discernment right
now. The ninth season, Christian, and Charlie's like, curtail me.
Christian life.
Curtail me.
The Christian life.
So the Christian mind.
Mind. Thank you.
And so he's a contemporary of, a student of, disciple of C.S. Lewis. And he writes this book, The Christian Mind, in 1963. And if I could just give a really quick description, this is my understanding and description. It might not be the best terms, but I'll say it's a Christian social commentary on his nation, Britain, in that time period. And what he is lamenting is that we no longer have a thoroughly Christian mind. We don't think about all of life in a Christian way. He laments that Christian thinking has been segmented or kind of pigeonholed into issues of personal morality or theology. But the Christian way of thinking, what we see as true, does not filter to all the areas of life, society, culture, politics, all of those things. And so he identifies that problem, and then he goes on to describe what he sees as the distinctives, the marks of the Christian mind. So here are his chapters. The first part of the book has two chapters: the lack of a Christian mind, and he talks about the surrender to secularism, so that we have allowed a secular way of thinking to dominate the nation. And then he contrasts thinking Christianly with thinking secularly. And that whole, those two chapters, about maybe, 50 pages or so, he is really just setting the table of like, do you see how the, and he's using a lot of examples of things that have happened. They're historical events. You could go back and study them. And he's like, look at when this happened. And this is what the newspaper said. And it's like, why would they even say that? That's not a Christian. Like if we're a Christian nation, why are we thinking this way? And it's giving examples of things, which is very helpful. And then part two of the book, he's again, the marks of the Christian mind. And I'll just read through them. It's supernatural orientation. It's awareness of evil. It's conception of truth. It's acceptance of authority. It's concern for the person. And then the last one, it's sacramental caste, which we'll come back to that. Overall, I thought each of those chapters was very insightful and helpful. And here's how I would maybe recommend the book. There are some books. Oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Is this the book that when you gave it an initial review, you had sections of the book that you scored differently?
No. This is different. I heard about this book in that book.
In that book. Okay.
So that book is Mere Discipleship by Alistair McGrath.
Okay.
And in one of the opening chapters, McGrath is is like a groundbreaking work.
Okay.
Harry Blamire's Christian Mind. And so this has always been on my list because of referencing it in McGrath's work.
Okay. Thank you.
But I would say if you'd like me to do that again, part one.
No, that's okay.
I thought it was helpful.
I would say part one is kind of, it's dense.
Even because if you're like Tim over there and you're like, I'm not going to read the whole thing. Now we know like, where do we focus?
Yeah.
Like
I would say you could focus on part two, the first three chapters. Supernatural orientation, awareness of evil, and conception of truth. Once you get beyond that, it's, I think, really just circling around the same ideas again, slightly different, but it's all good. But I would say those three chapters, I would give a 7.
Okay.
The rest of it's probably like a 5.
Okay.
And it is a very dense, technical, historical thing. So it's hard for a modern American to jump in and understand what's going on in part one. Just because we don't, the references and some of the terminology is kind of lost on us. And so there's times where I had, what does this word mean? You know, and it doesn't mean the same thing to me today. Most notably sacramental, like we hear that and we instantly think a theological idea, and that's not really what he's doing in that chapter. Mm. And so, I'd describe the book to you this way. There are some books that give you answers. And there are some books that help you how to ask questions.
I'm sold.
This is not an answer book.
Oh my word.
This is a how do you ask the right questions book.
Totally sold, Charlie.
And so to give you an example, so I'll give two examples that as I was listening to this, things that just came up and I found myself asking questions that were prompted by Lemire's. So one. Had a conversation a few weeks back about AI, ChatGPT. And I was being asked like, well, what do you think about an author who's human providing the input to the ChatGPT and then allowing the AI to make it better so that ideas get disseminated, you know, good ideas get out there. And I found myself thinking, well, hold on, from chapter two of part two, awareness of evil. There's nothing that's neutral. Like there's no AI that is neutral. It's good or bad. And that is a staple of Christian thinking. And then the awareness of truth and humanity that, you know, what are the implications of a technology that is dehumanizing us, which Blamire talks about in this book. And again, it's not that I instantly had the answer. Well, what do you think about AI? Oh, it's fine. Oh, it's wrong. The Christian mind helped me ask the right questions.
See, that's so good.
Yeah. And then here, I'm going to give another direct example. And this was actually a few weeks back. I was driving into our recording. So it was a Tuesday morning. And there was a conversation happening on sports radio. And you're like, oh, that has nothing to do with Christianity. You know, again, what is Blamire's lamenting It's that Christian thinking had been segmented to only matters of personal morality and theology. And here we're talking about a sports issue. So I'm going to read the transcript. They have a podcast, so I pulled it up. This is word for word what was said 2 weeks ago on a Des Moines radio station. So they're talking about a popular football player, Christian McCaffrey, who has an injury. And here's the quote. And there's two speakers here, so you kind of catch it's a back and forth. He's not expected back now until November. Christian McCaffrey went to Germany to see a specialist. And that raised some eyebrows to a lot of people, like, okay, what's going on? Well, he has tendonitis in his Achilles. I've never had an Achilles injury, knock on wood, as I made fun of Ross yesterday with my back. And now I've got a back injury, but I've never had an Achilles injury. And other guy. And they're saying he has it in both of his legs, like one's worse than the other, but he has it in both. And I wanted to talk to a doctor about this. And he, that doctor, just sent me a note. He goes, just drop this to your listeners. That's something to talk about. And here's the note. What do these guys do? They're not really going to see a specialist. That was a nice one, Ross. They're actually going to get some stem cells injected into their body to have a counter reaction to everything. And that type of therapy is not legal in the United States. And we see a lot of people doing this. Danica Patrick has been doing it. Tony Robbins does it. A lot of athletes will go to get stem cells. And okay, so what's going on here? A sports discussion. And they highlight that, well, this popular player, MVP candidate, is going out of the United States to get a therapy that's illegal in America. What ensues is, well, why is it illegal? Why is it illegal? And the one says, well, it's because they use embryonic stem cells. Oh, that's why it's such a hot button issue. And then what does the host say to cap the conversation? Oh, that's a really political issue. And again, they're having this discussion and I'm listening. And I don't have answers popping up into my head. I have questions.
This is so good.
And well, how is embryonic stem cells a political issue? Mm. Isn't that a purely moral Christian issue? And here we are in a secular nation who no longer yep. even considers humanity good and evil,
mm-hmm.
and any of the conception of truth that's in the Christian mind. And this was this literally, as we're recording this, early October happened on, and here's a radio program like, oh yeah, there's no issue. It's just political. You know, people on the right think this way, people on the left think this way, and you know, everybody has their own opinion, and that is a secular mind. And so Blam Iris, I keep saying it incorrectly. His book is helpful because as I was reading it, I was identifying the questions to ask. I was identifying the cracks in the secular thinking. And I mean, we talk about this all the time, but where is this book helpful is that it brings you to an acute sense of a secular, progressive, pragmatic way of thinking. And it's going to help you dialogue and question your way through it. And so for those three chapters in part two, where he's talking about truth and morality, I think it's well worth the purchase. The last chapter does have something kind of wonky in it, where he's talking about the sacramental cast and the discussion. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, is a sacramental cast what you wear if you break your religious bones?
You're horrendous.
Sorry, I went the whole time.
Semantics. You
know? He was saving
your truth
that one.
Is your truth.
Oh my word. Who's secular now?
Yeah. So where he goes in the very last chapter is he is talking about the issue of the youth of the day. So this is the youth of the 60s who are now not in their teens anymore. So we're a generation or two beyond them. And in the 60s in Britain, he's identifying that these youth have these passions that are being stimulated by advertisements, as he would say. And so he's identifying this issue of longing, of how do you, correctly understand the desires that humans have and like a quest for beauty and longing. So he gets into, as a disciple of Lewis, the ideas of romanticism as opposed to classicism, which is like classical beauty or art. There's very definitive order and a way of doing things, where romanticism breaks from those. And then it's this, you know, kind of uncontrollable longing. And then Lewis would talk about this, Tolkien would talk about this, but they want a more Christian romanticism where you understand that the longings that you have reveal to you that there's a world out there that can really satisfy you, which there's parts of that that we really like. I just note at the end of this book, there's some theology that's really wonky where he's like, oh, these passions that these teens have aren't wrong. You just have to direct them the right way. So I would actually majorly disagree with him that, you know, the natural impulses, sexual or entertainment wise, that he's identifying, they're not naturally okay. So, and there's some other smaller issues throughout, as you can see him thinking. Overall, it's a wonderful book, and I would encourage people to purchase it and read it or listen to it like I did. And I think it will help you. I don't think it's for everybody. It is dense. It took me a while to sift through some of his chapters and his thinking and his logic, but overall, a very strong, a book that helps you ask the right questions. And especially in our very secular modern world, I think it is helpful to that end. And so I would give it a very high recommendation. I think I'm going to land on a 6. So it's not, I don't think it's in the top tier, but it's really close to that. And yeah, so The Christian Mind by Harry Blamires. And yeah, any thoughts you guys have about that?
I got a couple. Number one, I'm so sold by this that I was messing with my ThriftBooks account while we were talking, and I was able to reset my password so I could order it for $5.29 used, but I had rewards, and so I only had to pay $1.50 for shipping. So that's on the way. I'm super excited about it. Number two, it is interesting. Romanticism would be fun to study and talk about sometime. The Romantic movement in Western Civ we talk about, it follows the Enlightenment and the Scientific Revolution. And in those time periods, people are becoming total modernists, where everything is sensory information, like it's experiential knowledge, empiricism. And so we can make every decision perfectly if we just have the right inputs of data. And so you have Diderot creating the very first encyclopedia, where he's trying to catalog all knowledge, because if we just know all the things, we will do the right things and we will progress. But then what happens is you have families, and this is sort of what gives rise, and you'll hear this when you think of Pride and Prejudice that you've read. You have these families who are like, well, this woman would be better to marry because her family is more powerful and they have more money and you could have more children and you can have like all the like external stuff. And so then you have generations of people making decisions completely disregarding all of that stuff. And so then the Romantics sort of like swing in full force against all that. And I think if a lot of the Romantics go too far, but I think what Lewis is seeing is there is a natural part of us that God built with those experiences. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think it's fascinating. It's interesting. Yeah. How he's going to like, what he's going to do with those things.
I think that fascinated. Last chapter, because I don't currently have a physical copy. This mm-hmm. has all been on my drives in and out of work and re-listening. And I do have an electronic copy in like iBooks, but mm-hmm. iBooks is kind of poopy trash.
I know. I wished it was, if it's just not on all the devices.
It's hard to sync it between, and it's hard to keep where you're at. It doesn't have a lot of the tools that like a Kindle.
It's beautiful. It's like aesthetically beautiful, but it's not as good.
Doesn't function as well.
Yeah.
But there is a discussion in that last chapter as he's talking about romanticism, where he kind of puts the two avenues together and like plays them out. So it's like, let's assume that the impulses that people have can be solved here on earth. So let's take the spiritual element completely out. And so all of their desires can be satisfied here, and all they have to do is find the right things. And he's like, we all know that that's not the case. that like you infinitely long for things. And so the only answer to that question is there has to be another reality, which how Lewis-y does that sound?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Completely.
And in that sense, we do agree. Like we understand that there is a theological, spiritual fulfillment of our purpose that is only solved in, mm-hmm. in God. Mm-hmm. And he understands that. It's just hard to navigate him. And so I think I need to sift through it again. This is a strong reread candidate in probably a year or two.
So it sounds like, yeah.
It's something that I think you could come back to regularly to help you sift through issues. I really like those marks of the Christian mind. And, you know, I know we're going to end in a devotional here. I found it to be actually spiritually very helpful. Hmm. His second chapter in that part two, the eternal mindset. That thinking through your decisions as an eternal being, and he very logically thinks that through. And I found it very devotionally helpful to be considering, you know, we believe heaven and hell exist, eternity is real, and there's no wiggle room in that. And if you really hold that as a mark of your mind and you apply that foundational truth to the things you do each day, how that changes the way you live. And that, something that we have talked about before, but the way he discusses it, I found that to be very helpful. And so it's not just a thinky book. It also, it will be a spiritually stimulating read as well. So
that's interesting that you say that, because that's sort of what we believe in this podcast, that there's times where thinking actually is it is the avenue by which we renew our minds, which leads to devotional applicational thoughts. That's really fascinating, the eternal mindset.
And I guess kind of on that note, I'll share one last critique, and this is very similar to Lewis. Lewis almost never directly cites or interacts with scripture. And that's something that we don't have in this book. He's never like, oh, look at this passage. Look what it says. He's never directly interacting with the Bible, which, you know, I think his book would have been massively strengthened if he could have pulled passages to see like, oh, this idea of truth that we're discussing, look at this and this and that. But so he's not trying to create a theology. He's trying to get you to think. And so I think the purpose of the book, he accomplishes what he sets out to do. What is the difference between secular thinking and Christian thinking? I always would love people to have more scripture, but anyway.
Yeah, that's a really good qualification. That's like Lewis and Tolkien and all those guys. I mean, you got an Anglican, a Catholic, and so we appreciate their desire to encourage Christian thinking, even though their definition of Christianity is not very biblical. This whole romantic rationalist idea, you know, I think there's a book even C.S. Lewis, The Romantic Rationalist.
Yep, Colander is.
That's like an oxymoron to be a romantic and a rationalist a lot of times to me. And so I know that he's kind of playing with that. That'd be something interesting to study some more, and then how Blomiris would enter into that conversation.
I have read that book. I believe John Piper wrote the foreword to that. Is that the case?
Yes. And it was the Desiring God conference from 2014. And they took all the sessions and packaged them. I've never read it. I've watched some of the sessions.
Lewis himself identifies the, I don't know what the right word, the incongruence with those two ideas. There's a poem that he wrote, I think in the 20s. He might not have even been a Christian yet, but it's called Reason.
Oh,
yeah. And he's talking about the two sides of his being, where on one side, he's an atheist, doesn't believe in God, and the only thing he knows is true is fact. But then there's this other part of him that loves fairies and talking trees, and he's like, well, what's that? And he's like, that's what I really love. Yeah. And I feel like that's really true. And so that poem, I never identified it when I first interacted with it, but I think it's a sonnet. We should have Boyd on to like dissect the sonnet.
Totally
with
do
him.
That.
But so Reason by Lewis is a sonnet where he talks about that very issue of the rationality versus romanticism. Anyway.
All right, let's have a final meditation in God's word. We're going to be back in 2 Peter. I might live here for a while. This book's one of my favorites, and I've been working in 1 Timothy for quite a while in my personal devotional time, and lately I've been kind of walking through 2 Peter, kind of dabbling in it here and there. last time we were together, we talked about adding to your adding these things, these qualities we're about to talk about to your life. And the main point I was making was that this is an active responsibility on the part of the Christian. And so we need God's Spirit to produce fruit in our lives, but that is not an entirely passive responsibility. We have active responsibility to cultivate and add these things to our lives. The only way it can be accomplished is through God's Spirit, but that doesn't mean we sit back idly. So I'm going to read the passage again. I just want to talk about one of the virtues. So verse 3 says, His divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and to godliness through the knowledge of Him who called us to His own glory and excellence, by which He has granted to us very precious and very great promises, so that through them you may be become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped from the corruption that is in the world because of sinful desire. For this reason, make every effort to supplement or add to your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge, and knowledge with self-control, and self-control with steadfastness or endurance, and steadfastness or endurance with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love. So the first of those in the ESV is you add to your faith virtue. Now, what I don't like about the ESV translation here is that the word virtue is the same word as verse 3 when it talks about God's own glory and excellence. So virtue and excellence are identical terms, and this bothers me. In translation, you should keep those things the same when they're that near to one another. The word virtue here, I don't normally talk about Greek, but some of my students will know this word from Western Civ. The word virtue there is arete. Arete. And arete was a virtue and a value of the Greeks. It literally just means excellence. And if you think about it, the elite in a society are often referred to as the aristocrats. That's because they are the excellent rulers, the aristocrats, arete. So it is interesting that Paul uses this word. It is also found in the list in Philippians 4:8 when it's like whatever is noble, whatever is true, whatever is worthy, anything excellent, same word. So let's just meditate on that virtue, because sometimes there really is value in just thinking about the virtues that the scriptures command you to cultivate. You need to think of the how, you need to think of the why, but sometimes you just need to think about the virtue itself. What is it? What does it look like? That's a valuable exercise. So as I look this up in some of my fancy dictionaries, it's really interesting that it does call it virtue. Virtue is a way to translate it in excellence, but it had a couple of quotes in the definition. So the first quote is from Homer, definition, and he used it as a term that meant consummate excellence or merit. And it's almost like the height of what is excellent. It is the pinnacle of it. If you get this, you've achieved the goal. And then it was a favorite subject of the Stoics because they thought that the virtue here related to things that are moral. So right away, we're seeing that this excellence is not merely a perfect score on your GPA or a perfect record in your job. There is a moral component in the culture at the time. Now, why I'm saying that is because when Paul uses this word, we can't divorce the meaning of the time from that. We have to see it. There's another guy named Cyrenus, and he said this: all excellence lies in uprightness, and a good person is one who is upright. And that upright there, I believe, is the term virtue or excellence. And then the definition it gives is an uncommon character that is worthy of praise, excellence of character or virtue. So, believer, what is your character like? And I think it's interesting that in that day and age, when Paul says you should be excellent, you should add excellence to your faith, the virtue level would have been something uncommon. So sometimes I think as Christians, maybe something we can learn here is that we're quite satisfied with a little bit. Oh, I'm a little bit good. I'm a little bit kind. I'm a little bit helpful. But it's interesting that elsewhere in Peter, he said, be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. And so the standard is not a little, but God's character himself. And God is the consummate excellent persona. So when people, when you say you have an excellent character, your character is excellent, I would say that you should be thinking, what do other people see? And we don't just live our lives, man fears, reputation, I get that. But if I were to say I'm an excellent person, and to a man, everyone in my life says, no, you're pretty wicked, then I don't think I'm meeting that standard. I think this standard is the point at which you are so excellent, you're following the Lord so carefully and closely and lovingly, that other people start to say something. So, question for your application today. Do other people see your character as excellent? Now, if those people are wicked, if those people are unbelievers, of course they're going to say no. But think about your godly pastor. Think about your godly friends. How would they assess your character? If it's not this, then hey, maybe we need to do some work in the scriptures. Maybe we need to learn if we're loving the wrong things, and that's leading us to live the wrong way. Hope that thought renews your mind, and we will see you next week on the Thinklings Podcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Thinklings Podcast. We would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback, suggestions, or potential topics that you'd like us to discuss, you can contact us through our email, thinklingspodcast@gmail.com. Remember, don't let this conversation end with this podcast. Read good books, talk about them with your friends, and always continue to cultivate your mind. See you next time on the Thinklings Podcast.